Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of the call. If you'd like to ask a question during that time, please press star followed by number one. Today's conference is being recorded. Any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn over the meeting to Kathy Harbin, Chief of News Media Branch, CDC.
Thank you, Angela. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this CDC media availability. We understand there is lots of interest in Utah's report of the new case of Zika. We are holding this call so CDC experts can answer questions about what the new report means in terms of family contact, infection control, mosquito control, and any changes in current guidance. CDC is not releasing new or additional information today. The purpose of today's availability is to provide additional context about what this case means based on what we currently know. We will continue to provide updates on this case from our perspective as new information is available. Joining us on the call today are Satish Pillai. He is incident manager with CDC, deputy incident manager with CDC's Zika response. Denise Jamison, she's chief of the Women's Health and Fertility Branch, Division of Reproductive Health in CDC's National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. Michael Bell is deputy director of CDC's Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion. Ingrid Rabe is a medical epidemiologist with CDC's Division of Vector-Borne Diseases, and Dr. Robert Wirtz is an entomologist here at CDC. Dr. Pillai will begin with brief remarks, and then we'll take your questions.
Good afternoon. Utah health officials confirmed today a new case of Zika in Utah. This person is associated with the family of the patient who died in late June. Based on what we know now, the person has not recently traveled to an area with Zika and has not had sex with someone who is infected with Zika or a returning traveler. In addition, there's no evidence at this time that mosquitoes that are commonly the way that Zika is spread are present in Utah. A CDC emergency response team, or CERT, is in Utah at the request of the Utah Department of Health. The team includes experts in infection control, virology, mosquito control, disease investigation, and health communications. The investigation in Utah includes additional interviews with and laboratory testing of family members and healthcare workers who may have had contact with a person who died, and trapping of mosquitoes and assessing the risk of local spread by mosquitoes. As of July 13, 2016, 1,306 cases of Zika have been reported in the continental United States and Hawaii. None of these have been the result of local spread by mosquitoes. These cases include 14 believed to be the result of sexual transmission and one that was the result of a laboratory exposure. We don't have all the answers right now, but we will continue to update what we know and when we know it. At this point, we look forward to taking your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. One moment, please, while we wait for the first question. Our first question comes from Mike Stobie with Associated Press.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. First, could you just make sure I have the complete list? There's been evidence of Zika infection found in what bodily fluids? Semen, vaginal fluid, urine, blood, saliva, tears, anything else? And then also, could you just say a little bit more about what type of care or how intense the care was that the family contact was giving to the decedent, and how many people were also caring for that person, whether it was at a home or in a hospital?
I can begin, and then I can turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Rob, for additional comments regarding body fluids that we know that Zika has been recovered in, as you pointed out, blood, semen, saliva, and urine. The question of the type of care that this is an important element in our investigation. The person was caring for the elderly patient before death. We're trying to determine if the contact between the very sick elderly patient and the person played a role in how the person got sick. We don't have all those answers right now, but we will continue to share the information as it becomes available. I want to make sure that Ingrid, if she has any additions to the body fluids that I described as having Zika recovered it in the past, if she wanted to supplement that with any other information.
Thank you very much. So just in addition to that, as was mentioned, was the genital tract swabs that have been found positive and reported on in the literature. As far as other published reports go, there's also been a report of detection of virus in breast milk, as well as detection of viral RNA in aqueous humor, so fluid from the inside of the eye in a patient who had uveitis due to.
Does that mean tears?
No, that's actually internal fluid in the eye.
Okay, and how many people are you interviewing, other caregivers?
The investigation is ongoing, and our teams in the field are continuing to evaluate the numbers of individuals that may be involved, risk stratifying, and attempting to target the investigation.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Brady Dennis with Washington Post.
Hi, thanks for the call. I had two different questions. One is, if the deceased person, are you able to share whether this person died at a healthcare facility, at a hospital, or at home? And also, the other person infected, did that person show symptoms of the Zika virus? Is that partly how he was diagnosed? I mean, obviously, many people do not, and so I just wondered if he had outward symptoms. Thanks.
Regarding the care of and location of the where the index patient passed away, we would, of course, defer to our colleagues at the Utah Department of Health for details of such as that. Regarding the symptoms of the other individual who acquired Zika, as is common with Zika, they developed mild symptoms and rapidly recovered, which is the typical time course and presentation and recovery that you would expect with Zika virus.
Next question, please.
One moment. Helen Branswell with STAT, your line is open.
Thanks very much. I was struck by the observation in your press release today that the person who died had more than 100,000 times the viral level that is normally seen with Zika. I'm wondering what your thinking is on that. Why was he so viremic, and whether that would sort of change your thinking about the potential for transmission in a close contact setting like that. Would one have to worry at that point that maybe virus was being even emitted through the skin, for instance?
I'm going to start, and then I'm going to turn it over to my laboratory and infection control colleagues. I think what you've highlighted is a very important aspect of this. This is a very unique situation with these elevated viral loads that we haven't previously seen, and the family contact was caring for the individual who was very sick and later died. However, there's a lot we don't know about Zika virus, and we are still doing a lot of investigation to understand whether Zika can be spread from person to person through contact with a sick person. But that's under investigation. The facts remain that Zika is spread primarily through the bite of the infected Aedes species mosquito. A pregnant woman can pass Zika virus to her fetus during pregnancy or around the time of birth, and a person who's infected with Zika virus can pass it to sex partners. So that is what we do know, and that is what we believe presently are the primary modes of transmission. But I would like to allow our colleagues to weigh in as well.
So this is Mike Bell. From the infection control perspective, I think it's early to make a clear statement about what we think could have happened. Certainly a high viral load is something that we take very seriously. And as you just heard, it's not something about which we have a very long experience. We are not at a point today to describe any specific action that might have led to transmission. That's the point of the current investigation underway in Utah. As soon as we know something new, we will certainly use that information to assess risk to both family members and others and healthcare personnel. But currently, there's nothing specific we can say other than recognizing that a high viral load could be a different situation than we would ordinarily see.
Can I ask a follow-up question, please?
Yes.
Hello? Okay. Thank you. When the man in Utah died, the way that his death was framed was that he had Zika, but he also had another severe illness, and it wasn't clear whether he died from Zika or died with Zika or whether Zika, you know, how much Zika contributed to his death. When you see a viral load like that, does that help to answer the question?
So you're asking sort of a chicken or the egg question. Someone who is extremely ill and debilitated from another disease process could have a diminished immune system that doesn't fight the virus as well, and that might allow more virus to have proliferated in the bloodstream. On the other hand, someone with a high virus load could be more sick with the actual viral infection. I personally can't tell you which way that went, but it's certainly worth thinking about.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Dr. John LaPook with CBS News.
Hi, it's kind of a follow-up on exactly that line of questioning. I'm wondering, the chicken and egg, you know, was the patient immunocompromised from some non-Zika condition first and that led to a higher viral load? Or is there almost a sepsis-like thing that happens from Zika? I don't remember seeing that in the literature, that it can cause a sepsis-like picture, which would then lead to an overwhelming viremia. Can you tell us a little bit about the underlying illness that was the non-Zika condition that the deceased man had?
No. At this point, these are all avenues that are under investigation.
Okay.
And the Department of Health in Utah could potentially provide more details about the individual case.
Okay.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Kimberly Leonard with U.S. News and World Report.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Wondering whether the possibility that the virus has become airborne is being considered, or if that's just off the table given the way that we know it already transmits.
So in our line of work, nothing is ever truly off the table. The table is vast. And we never want to underestimate possibilities. However, it would be extremely, extremely unlikely for something like that to occur. In the absence of something like a medical procedure that could create a mechanical aerosol, for example, this is one of the reasons when we handle viruses and other pathogens in the laboratory, we use special precautions because we spin these things in machines that travel at very high velocity, and if a test tube breaks, that could create a special risk. In contrast, a human being behaves very differently. And so what we see with this virus is, as you've heard already, that the predominant mode of transmission is through the bite of an infectious mosquito. Right now, we're assessing very carefully to see whether any other form of transmission could be happening, and it's a little bit early to be saying specifically.
And I'm sorry, who's speaking?
This is Mike Bell.
Thank you, Dr. Bell.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Robert King with Washington Examiner.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I had a question about the mosquitoes in Utah. You said that you were catching and testing mosquitoes in the area, but the two mosquitoes that primarily spread Zika, the Aedes aegypti and Asian tiger, aren't in Utah. Can you tell me, I mean, do you believe that more mosquitoes are now potentially spreading the virus or could potentially spread the virus?
This is Bob Wirtz. No, we don't believe that. Right now, as you mentioned, the Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus are not currently found in the area. We have two CDC entomologists who are assisting the Salt Lake City Mosquito Abatement District in mosquito collections. They're collecting quite low numbers of different species of mosquitoes, primarily Culex mosquitoes, that often preferably feed on birds. As Mike mentioned, we never take anything off the table, but right now we feel that transmission by Aedes mosquitoes is highly unlikely.
So then what are you looking for then in the mosquitoes that you are collecting?
They're checking them for West Nile virus as well as the Zika virus. Just to cover all the bases and to make sure we get as much information as we can from the collecting that we're doing.
Okay.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Maren McKenna with National Geographic.
Thanks for having this call. I recognize that you said already that you don't have a hypothesis yet for this transmission, that it's too early. But you must know that this is going to ignite a lot of concern in the general public that's paying attention to Zika. So is there anything you can say to tamp that down in any way to keep people from thinking as though anyone who might have been exposed to Zika is now some sort of walking source of infection?
I think this goes back to my earlier statement that, you know, the primary mode of transmission for Zika is through the bite of the Aedes mosquito. And that the other, and that has thus far been the most common mode of transmission. There are other mechanisms or modes of transmission, such as through sex and through a pregnant woman passing virus to a fetus during pregnancy or on the time of birth. So that is what we know. And we don't have evidence right now that Zika can be passed to one person to another by sneezing or coughing, routine touching, kissing, hugging, or sharing utensils. The person with the new case of Zika that is being reported today was a family contact of an elderly Utah patient who had been infected with Zika and, as we had heard earlier, had a very high viral load. So while we still don't know exactly how this family contact became sick and we're actively investigating it, what we do know is that the primary mechanisms of transmission are mosquito-borne. So we feel that that should provide some level of – that should provide reassurance to the public.
question, please.
Next question comes from Stephanie Shusheray with CDRAP News.
Hi, thanks for taking this question. I'm just wondering, what are the current safety guidelines for protecting healthcare workers or caregivers in other countries where Zika is more endemic?
This is Mike Bell. You're asking what the infection control practices in other countries are?
Yeah.
So I'm not aware of anything special or different other than what we would recommend here. So, for example, I don't know of any country that's treating these patients as though they're, like you asked earlier, somebody did, transmissible through the air. This is something that we're approaching, and I believe most, if not all, countries are approaching using standard precautions to make sure that healthcare personnel don't have any direct contact with blood or body fluids through either broken skin or a needle stick or splashes to the mucous membranes.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Julie Strienhausen with Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi, yes, thanks. I have two questions. First of all, I just wanted to confirm. So it was not learned that the deceased person had Zika until after his or her death. Is that correct? So is it right to assume that the person who was caring for this patient did not know that the elderly man had Zika? And I have a follow-up.
I think the I don't want to speculate on what the individual, like the timing of when the individual found out the diagnosis of Zika. I think the important thing is when you are potentially caring for an individual, when a healthcare worker is caring for an individual with Zika virus, the use of standard precautions is the appropriate way to help prevent transmission of infection and prevent exposure to blood and bodily fluids.
Okay, and a follow-up. This is from Mike Bell. Mike, do you think that this alters the CDC's recommendations for personal protective gear for healthcare workers in any way? And I mean, I several times in your press releases you were saying it was surprising. Clearly it is, but I'm wondering if that means particularly in extremely health or extremely ill patients, and you need to do some testing for a high viral load, and you need to alter PPE instructions.
So currently we're not altering PPE instructions. I think what this highlights is the fact that, you know, when you have an infection like Zika virus infection, wherein a good percentage of patients don't actually have symptoms, it means that it's as important as ever to stick with good adherence to standard precautions. Just like we assume anybody might carry hepatitis or HIV, we don't wait for a positive diagnosis in order to prevent blood or body fluid exposure. The same thing is true with Zika virus, and I think this is a great example of why we should never take chances, but always adhere to careful standard precautions.
And I would like to just reemphasize one point. You know, as of 13 July, there have been 1,306 cases of Zika reported in the continental United States and Hawaii, and of these cases, there's no reason to suspect that this kind of person-to-person transmission was the mode of transmission. So this is a unique event in that context. So I think that needs to also be kept in mind.
Thank you.
I think we have time for one more question.
Our last question comes from Janine Interlandi with Consumer Reports.
Thanks so much for having the call. Quickly, most of my questions were answered, but you mentioned earlier, and I think I saw in an early report, that there was a question of whether or not this second infection, this person's interaction with the elderly man who was sick, whether that had anything to do with his contracting the virus. Is there a chance that it didn't? Is there a chance that he got it in some other way and that it didn't come from his patient?
I think all we're saying with that is that we are we have a ongoing investigation. We're considering, as you had heard earlier, mosquito trapping is occurring. A detailed hospital investigation is undergoing. So we don't want to put the blinders on and just go down one avenue of investigation. So I think that's the point of that statement.
Thank you.
Last call. If there is another question, we can take it. If not, we will wrap it up.
Yes, we do have a few more.
Okay.
Melissa Healy with the Los Angeles Times, your line is open.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. Can I ask, as part of the investigation, is there still the possibility of conducting any postmortem study of the deceased patient? I mean, will his brain be looked at for the possibility that of invasion of the Zika virus there? Is there any evidence he had Guillain-Barré syndrome?
For the details of the clinical course, the investigation is ongoing. I don't have that level of detail right now regarding the specifics of his elderly individual's clinical course. And regarding the care I would defer to the Utah Department of Health for those particulars, but we are continuing to doing the clinical investigation, understanding the potential risk factors that may have contributed to the as we get more information, we'll share as quickly as we can updates and information that will shed more light onto this unique event.
We do have time for one more question.
Next question comes from Heather Tesserero with CBS News.
Hi, just two things. One was the viral load of the new Utah patient, was that in a more typical range? And the other thing is, can you shed some light on the process and the procedures you'll be undertaking to try to understand the unusual viral load in the deceased patient?
I think for the latter, it'll require a thorough review of the clinical course, getting a better understanding of underlying potential medical comorbidities. But as you heard earlier in this call by Dr. Bell, there was this chicken or egg kind of situation, and understanding whether if there was an underlying illness may have contributed to immunosuppression, or whether just becoming critically ill contributed to the high viral load. So at this juncture, I don't think we can provide an answer, but the goal of the investigation is to review the clinical course and the medical records and get a better understanding of how the individual may have come to have developed such a high viral load. Regarding the initial question, we have no indication to suggest that the individual who subsequently became ill had the similar type of high viral load that was noted in the index case. And most importantly, this individual rapidly recovered, and which is the typical clinical course that one might expect with Zika virus infection.
Thank you so much. And just one quick follow-up, which was it, I'm sorry if you've addressed this already, but was it known with the deceased patient, was it not discovered that the patient had Zika virus until the patient was deceased, or was it known while the patient was ill and dying?
I would say that this is still in the realm of our active investigation. As we get more information about all the sequence of events and understand the timing and work with our colleagues at the Utah Department of Health, we hope to get you updates regarding this and additional information as quickly as possible. And again, I think the bottom line here is that, you know, this is a unique case. Of the 1,300 cases we've reported thus far in the continental United States and Hawaii, there's no suggestion of this type of spread to date. But Zika continues to surprise us. I think the above all, like we want to make sure that, you know, pregnant women are safe, that they should not be traveling to some of the locations that we've described previously that have active mosquito-borne transmission of Zika, which can be found on the CDC website, and that the individuals who may be at risk for sexual transmission of Zika should use condoms correctly and consistently at all times, or abstain from sex. So again, thank you very much for calling in, and I'm going to turn it back over to Ms. Harbin.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. This concludes today's media availability. We will post a transcript on the CDC Newsroom website as soon as possible. If you have other questions or need additional information, you can call us at 404-639-3286, or you can email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. Please disconnect at this time.